Matthew 12, 1 to 8. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some heads of grain and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath." He answered them, "Haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that the priests on Sabbath duty in the temple desecrate the Sabbath and yet are innocent? I tell you that something greater than the temple was here. If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath."
So we have begun doing a series of Sunday lessons on what might best be described as some Jesus geography. We've begun to trace some of the places that Jesus went on this planet. We've had Jesus escaping with him into Egypt, and then back out of Egypt after Herod was dead. We've had Jesus going into Nazareth, Joseph landing there as the default town, playing keep away from the dangerous ruler in the south named Archelaus. And then later on, Jesus goes back out of Nazareth when the hometown crowd turned on him and pushed him towards the edge of a cliff. Two Sundays back, we've had Jesus in the massive and totally impressive Jerusalem temple. Annual visits with his parents to the grand temple, this time being 12 years old. Went there on purpose and was eventually found to be asking questions of the elders, of the teachers. And then later on, Jesus was back at the grand temple one more time with a less than generous attitude, with table flipping and coins spilling on his mind. Jesus comes back to the temple. And so far in our Bible lessons, we might surmise that Jesus' life is anything but sedentary. He is not standing still. He is not stationary by any means. This morning we have Jesus in the grain fields, which at first glance does seem rather nondescript. It's kind of local. I mean, where would you put grain fields on the map? How would you Google Earth zoom in on him there? One might think, well, this is hardly worth a mention. In the grain fields? So what? But if we're reading in Matthew's gospel, and we are tracing Jesus' movements, we find that he goes there. Verse 1 reads, "At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain to eat." And it does quickly raise some rather modern questions, does it not? Like, first off, is that an okay thing to do? Can you just begin walking through someone's grain fields and start peeling yourself off some lunch? Are grain fields considered to be in the public domain, or are they private property? Was Jesus trespassing, or had he gotten the go-ahead nod from the owner beforehand? Or is it that Jesus is Jesus and Jesus can do whatever Jesus wants? What are we to think, those of us who are property owners? Up north, my farm and our house were separated by Mr. Longacre's farm. So three or four times a day, I'd make the mile and a half trek from our house through his farm to my farm. Now, Mr. Longacre grew corn for his cows in the fields, which bordered the back and forth road that I traveled. And then on the other side of our farm was this mile-long lake with cabins full of lake people, Lakers. And the ways of Laker people are not the same as farm people. And one August afternoon on my way from farm to house, I caught a Laker guy along the road pilfering ears of corn out of Mr. Longacre's field. I caught him red-handed, and like a good neighbor, I was there. I stopped in to tell Mr. Longacre that there's a guy up the road thieving corn out of your field right now, insinuation being that you should get up there and stop this malfeasance. And all Mr. Longacre did was stand there and laugh and laugh and laughed his head off. And he said, that guy up there cannot tell the difference between field corn and sweet corn. Wait till he gets a taste of that field corn. He won't be back. At first glance, it appears that Jesus was doing the very same thing that the corn swiper did. And is it our strong sense of private property that we might first raise our eyebrows at Jesus and his disciples for wading into the grain field? And what if it was our grain field and we saw Jesus and his disciples wading into it? Jesus, he is in the grain fields. It's what we read. Now, there are 8 verses in this morning's Bible lesson, and in some ways, reading a scripture lesson like this one is a little bit like stepping stoning our way across a shallow pond. Which stone do we land on the longest? What is the lesson that deserves our greatest attention? If Jesus the trespasser seems unlikely to us, then perhaps hunger would be a better stepping stone for us to land on. Jesus is in the grain fields because his disciples are hungry. It says that in verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pick heads of grain and to eat. So hunger, disciple hunger, is this what had Jesus veering off into the grain fields? As Paul was reading, he was citing one of the stories that Jesus used from his own scriptures to be found in 1 Samuel 21 about the time that David and his companions were hungry, and David rendezvoused with the priests and asked the priests for some bread. And in their tradition, there is both ordinary bread that is baked and set aside for worship and worship purposes only, and everybody knows that. But in this particular case, the priest decides that David will get the holy bread, because that's all he has that is available, and because David and his companions are hungry. So worship bread or people bread, Jesus reminds the Pharisees of this. Jim and Darla were a couple that were part of our congregation at Lakeview, and they raised their own family. And after that, they began to take in foster children. Their last placements were 3 young children from Philadelphia, twin boys and their younger sister, Monica. Monica Green, who is as feisty as they come. Now, part of the foster care arrangement was for the 3 of them to have time with their father in Philadelphia, usually during the summer months when school was out, for 3 weeks or a month at a time. Now, their Philadelphia father was a man who tried real hard, but his limitations in life often left very little in the house to eat. And many times during the day, the 3 children were left to their own devices. The twins soon learned the art of hustle, washing car windows at the gas station near their home for coins to get something to eat. But Monica was younger and would walk the sidewalks and stick her little hand through the garden fences and pluck a tomato if she could reach it. And when they got back home, Monica told Jim and Darla these things, and Jim, her dad, said to her, "But Monica, this is stealing. You can get into big trouble for that." And Monica yelled back at him, "But Dad, you do not understand. I was so hungry." So I wonder, if we were to read our Bibles on an empty stomach, would that change anything about how we view it? Is hunger a part of this lesson? And does Jesus go into the grain fields for that reason? Hunger. Jesus uses his Bible to defend that very action. And if empty stomach Bible reading would affect our political leanings, Jesus, for whatever reason, he's in the grain fields. Of course, there is another drama going on in this scripture lesson. If we are step-stoning our way through this lesson, we cannot ignore the drama part, the debate between Jesus and the Pharisees, and the debate over proper worship. If you grew up without a faith background at all, the drama in this scripture lesson may not be that apparent at all. The unfolding drama is about Sabbath keeping, how to do that correctly, the correct worship of God, and when. And it was a big, big deal. Jesus is in the grain fields with his hungry disciples, and the disciples are grain stripping and filling their mouths with it, and it is the meticulous Pharisees who begin to take issue with this. Not so much over private property, not so much that there was any real danger in the hunger, but the drama centered on the worship rules and how worship was to be carried out and protected. You remember, there are 10 commandments to be considered, and one of those 10, number 4, is you shall remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. It is quite an explicit commandment, and it is even further spelled out. On every Sabbath day, there is to be no work. None. Not you, not your kids, not your employees, not your animals, and even those around you who do not share your religious practices. Give them the day off too. And yes, the Pharisees were no idle bumpkins. They were about as careful can possibly be on these matters. And so to them, pulling grain from a stem in a field was considered reaping, which is a Sabbath no-no. And they were taking Jesus to task about it, and that is part of the drama of this unfolding scripture. Proper respect for God in worship and all of life, which is commendable. Jesus is in the grain fields on the Sabbath day, and I think we can assume that Jesus knows all about his Sabbath traditions. He knows his whereabouts. He was brought up going to the temple. He is a mature 30-year-old man. He's been around the proverbial block more than once. He is not ignorant of Jewish worship practice. And so then it makes you wonder if Jesus was the drama instigator. Has he veered off into the grain fields on purpose? Is he trying to get a rise out of the Pharisees? Is he trying to prove a point? Were his disciples all that hungry in the first place? Was Jesus picking a skirmish on purpose? If you grew up without a faith background, the drama in the scripture lesson may not be all that apparent. But if you grew up a Mennonite, you are likely aware of how much careful attention was given to Sunday practice. What's work? What isn't? Is blueberry picking on a Sunday to be considered work or recreation? Does it depend on how many you pick? Is car washing, is bowling a problem? I so remember much careful fussing about these matters as a child. It was a woman named Dory who once told me about an experience she had. She broke into her veterinary practice in Berks County, Pennsylvania, servicing many what might be called black bumper Mennonite farms. And one of those farms had a roadside stand that sold sweet corn. And of course, it came with a very visible and legible sign, no Sunday sales. But one Sunday, a customer did drive up their lane who had seen the very visible and legible no Sunday sales sign, but who had decided to take it up with the farmer anyway. They said, "We're having a family reunion this evening, 20 to 30 hungry faces for a sweet corn supper. Would you sell us some, even though it is your Sunday?" And the farmer did. He didn't sell it, he gave it, saying to them, "I think the neighborliness of God is more important than my sign." So off he went with a bushel basket off into his grain field. In our scripture lesson this morning that Paul read, it turns out that some of the things that Jesus said were hugely important. To say something like, "Something greater than the temple is here." I mean, can you imagine that? 2 weeks ago, we touched on how important worship spaces can become. We looked at some really ornate buildings. Some of those buildings took an enormous amount of resources of cash and a labor force working 46 years and counting to build this darn thing. And you do sort of get attached to these awesomely worship and beautiful spaces. There's something greater than the temple going on? That's quite a thing to say while you're standing waist deep in the grain. And then Jesus says something else, not his own words, but a direct quote from his own scriptures from Hosea. Jesus quoting scripture, if you can imagine that. If you had known what this means, I desire mercy more than sacrifice. Mercy and not sacrifice, which is quite a thing to say when you are nowhere near a worship altar. Not sacrifice, but mercy. Quite a thing to say when the temple's in the rearview mirror and with kernels of grain dripping from your hands. Mercy, not sacrifice. There is one more stepping stone in the scripture lesson to consider. I will let you decide how long you want to stand on this particular stone, but I think it's worth noting. Three little vignettes to begin. One, back when Bill Clinton was president and the scandal with Monica Lewinsky was running thick, a columnist offered this perspective that to understand Mr. Clinton, you had to understand the town in which he grew up. He grew up in a place with high steepled churches on one side of the street and taverns on the other side of the street. And one kept those two areas of life very far apart. A Sunday church life and on one side of the street, and a weekday life and all of what that entails on the other side. Two lives, and you kept them separated. Vignette number two. Joe Lapp, who was president while I was at seminary, was responding to some heat by both parents and donors about some of the poor behavior by students that were going on at the university, and he said, "We are doing the best we can with the students that you are sending us." Which is kind of an ouch. As a knobby-kneed kid, I would often tag with my dad whenever he trekked into town. New Milford was where we spent most of our time, and no wonder, the creamery was there, the bank was there, and our school was there, and the Acme was there, and Agway was there, and Yisley's Meat Market was there, and Arat's Hardware Store was there, and Dr. Latta's office was there, along with five different churches. But it turns out that when Dad's truck needed repairs, my dad happened to frequent a garage on the back street on the far edge of town. Mr. Moore was the mechanic there. He was a small man with a permanent cigarette in his mouth, and he had an interesting vocabulary. It was a one-man, off-the-beaten-path garage. I once saw my dad barter beef with him to settle his bill. One day, as my dad steered his green Chevy truck off Main Street and its lovely selection of four other garages, legitimate garages, I asked him why he didn't take his truck to one of those better-looking places. And he said, "Well, I just think guys like Mr. Moore need the business more than the others, and so I take it to him to fix it." And sure, it was a small moment in the life of this kid, but it was a grain field moment. Care for another person learned not in church or from a book or during 2 weeks of VBS, but learned in the truck seat of a Tuesday during the week. One of the scriptures that Jesus grew up hearing was, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Keep these words that I am commanding you this day in your heart. Recite them to your children and talk about them when you're at home and when you're away and when you lie down and when you rise back up again." And so perhaps it's not so odd that Jesus can be found in the grain fields with his disciples, that Jesus is taking this everyday opportunity to teach his disciples that worship and life are not on opposite ends of the street from each other, that worship without mercy can be an ungainly noise. Last Sunday, Jason dismissed the worship service by saying, "Now, go be the church." Which is a great mantra. I hope it catches on, for it will dismiss us out of this worship space and scatter us off into our Monday fields.